This is All Things ANSYS, a podcast from the technical support staff at PEDT. Episode 11, we share our ANSYS-related New Year's resolutions for 2018 and a quick look at the newly discovered Meltdown and Spectre hardware vulnerabilities and how that might impact simulation users. Welcome to episode 11 of All Things ANSYS podcast, and welcome to 2018, a new year, new beginnings, new opportunities, blah, blah, blah. Hopefully, those of you back east who are listening didn't, that bomb storm and freezing and whatever it was, that looked really scary. It was tough here in Phoenix. I think there was a night where it got down to 37, so it was a little scary, and water did fall from the sky.
Did you cover up the plants?
I did not cover up the plants, but yeah, for those of us here in Phoenix, it was a little scary, but I hope everybody's safe and nobody lost any pipes or anything in that storm. But let's go ahead and get started with our podcast here. One of the cool things is right before I came in to start, I checked to see how many downloads we had or listens we had, and there were 2,000 downloads, which appeals to the engineer in me and the slightly OCD person in me. That it was a nice round number like 2,000. And it also appealed to the fact that doing the math for our average per episode is 200 because we've had 10 episodes before this one. So I do encourage our listenership goes up with every episode. I encourage you to share it with your friends, your coworkers, anybody in the ANSYS world you might know that might be interested in listening to this podcast. We sure enjoy doing it. So we hope you guys enjoy listening to it and share it. So we're going to start off by doing an introduction around the table, and as usual, we'll start to my left. Joe?
I'm Joe Woodward. I'm a senior mechanical engineer here at PEDT. I've been using ANSYS for around 20 years, and I'm part of the tech support and training group.
I'm Jim Peters. I'm a senior staff technologist. I've been doing FPA simulation for over 30 years with ANSYS, probably over 20 years.
You can go ahead and say what that first 10 years was.
Well, the first 10 years. Yeah, Nastran,
He's reformed.
Side, the dark side.
He's
right?
Reformed.
It's experimenting in college.
Yeah. It was a phase. Go ahead.
So my name is Ahmed. I'm part of the IT support team here. And I support engineers using ANSYS from the IT perspective.
I've been
appreciate. Yeah.
He sounds so happy about it.
Oh, Doug. How are you?
Right, exactly.
Doug's workstation is on my table.
I'm sorry. Oh, sorry about that, Doug. Ahmed's a little busy right now.
Right. That's weird.
Yeah, I've been dealing in supporting ANSYS for about 4 years.
And this is Ted Harris. I manage our simulation support group here at PEDT, and I've been using ANSYS for the better part of 30 years.
And my name is Eric Miller. I'm one of the owners here at PEDT, and I've been using ANSYS for 31 years. And well, I haven't been using it much lately, but I had used it in the past for that long. And I want to also hear from the person that can't be to my left because he's actually on Skype from Denver.
Yeah, my name is Doug Otis. I'm in the PDT Littleton office. I always have to look up my job title on my email, and I'm a simulation support and application engineer. At least that's what the latest signature says. And I remember being the young person at PDT, but I've been using ANSYS for 15 or so years. I am now an old curmudgeon, I guess.
Where did your life go? Where did your life go?
I don't want to talk about it.
So I want to welcome everybody here today. And for our first topic today, for episode 10, we kind of made our predictions for 2018. So we thought, kind of keeping that theme going since it's a new year, that we would talk about our New Year's resolutions, how they relate to ANSYS. And what I want to know from everybody is what part of ANSYS do you want to learn better, or a part that you don't know do you want to dig into and really understand? And, the idea being to kind of set a goal for ourselves to increase our knowledge. There's so much that you can do with these tools across all these physics and everything. And it's a great opportunity to expand our capability and benefit our employers and have fun. I enjoy learning. And I'll go ahead and get started first. My thing that I really want to do is learn the ANSYS Customization Toolkit. So what the ANSYS Customization Toolkit is an application programmer interface for many of the ANSYS software products, not all of them. And as time goes by, they will all have an ACT extension that applies to them. Primarily right now, it's ANSYS Mechanical and the Workbench page, the project page and the material properties page that come with that. That's primarily where it's right now, but there are other products that also have ACT extensions. And I guess one of the first things I want to learn is which of those other products have those extensions and how extensive they are. And what it allows you to do is basically customize the program. Write your own user interface, automate steps, make your own commands. Another very cool thing about ACT that I really like is that there is actually a place online where you can get those things. And it's actually called the ANSYS App Store. So if you have your buddies from college are working for some startup and they talk about how they got their application loaded up on the App Store, if you write an ACT extension, you can load yours up on the App Store too, and you can be cool.
Don't go that far.
Well, you can sound cool if you can go to a bar and talk to your friend really loud so everybody around you hears you. Yeah, I just uploaded that to the App Store.
Yeah, exactly. They're gonna think
you're some internet billionaire, right? Maybe not. I used to do a lot of customization back in the day. It was a key part of my job. I really enjoyed doing it. In fact, when I started doing customization on Maze of ANSYS, I was using Fortran. Then I used APDL and then C. And unfortunately, I stopped doing real work about the time that ACT came around. So I really want to get in there. I really want to see something up on the App Store. And I want to get back to the community. What's great about putting it on the App Store is that you sharing your knowledge. You know, everybody can see it. Correct if I'm wrong, it's appstore.ansys.com.
Yes, we got it right the first time.
We got it right the first time. Woohoo! So it used to be buried in the customer portal and always took me a while to find it, but now it's just appstore.ansys.com. If you don't know ACT, check it out. You can kind of see some of the things you can do with it. We've got a couple apps up there, some of the other channel partners do, and we hope to see more in the future, and I hope to come back to you and report what I've learned through the year. Last year I was going to learn Space Claim, and I got through two blog posts on it and then got distracted. So hopefully I'll do better this year, and hopefully I'll do better than my not eating cake for the year, which lasted till January 3rd with a chocolate cake that somehow ended up in my fridge, and I didn't want to throw it away. So anyway.
How very green of you.
It was green of me. Yeah. I didn't want to be wasteful. A resolution, a New Year's resolution isn't as important as you know, right. Being economical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So go ahead, Joe. What's yours?
Okay, so you got ACT. Mm-hmm. I think I'll do ACP, the ANSYS Composite Prep Post. Mm-hmm. It allows you to do your stack up for your layers and your materials and their orientations. And then one of the cool things is you can drape that, how the composites lay on the 3D part in the manufacturing process type of thing. So I want to dig into that and learn it. We have several customers using it and be able to support them better as well.
Very cool. And that was a tool that was acquired, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. We're doing more and more. We're seeing more and more composites out there, and it's just composites are just cool. So that'll be really interesting. Yeah,
especially on the thick composites, having the ability to actually extrude that as a solid rather than treating it as a shell. It's nice to have.
Yeah, that's always been one of the issues is when you've got most codes treat composites as a shell element. But a lot of times it's kind of thick these days, we do have – ANSYS does have a solid element that you can do composites with, which is pretty cool. And it's also great for the transition between composites and non-composites as well. So the metal parts. So anyway, I'm sure Joe will, after he learns all this, will come back and talk about it on the podcast. So why don't we go ahead and not go around the table and jump to the Doug on Skype.
Yeah, I'm floating above the table, so I guess I can slot in wherever.
He's out there in the ether. We're lucky that it's not Friday and he's not like everybody else in Denver skiing.
There's no friends and there's no work on a powder day, so that's tomorrow.
It's all about the powder.
It hasn't been winter yet here, so
that's true.
It's been like 60. Yeah, I guess mine's kind of a twofer. You talked about the ACT extensions, and one of mine is, you know, I'm kind of quick to write a quick command snippet, and there's actually the App Store is fairly well populated with a lot of free downloads, and so there's a lot of stuff there, and you don't always have to write a command snippet to show off to all of your friends, I guess. So that's it. That's a quick one, and then the other one is the Discovery Live. Is pretty exciting. And so, when I first started using ANSYS, it was that transition from mechanical APDL to Workbench, and no one liked Workbench, and I was very pro it. And now Discovery Live is coming along, and I'm actually pretty excited about it. But I think it's healthy to understand the intent and the limitations of it. And so once you can understand that, you know, it's not a do-all, say-all, absolute answer kind of product. It's pretty intuitive and pretty fast. Obviously, a lot of it is almost solved instantaneously. But being able to understand that and the limitations and where it plugs into ANSYS's discovery series of it's essentially a model hierarchy of very low level. Again, the marketing term is directionally accurate. You can call it, if you squint hard enough, you know, maybe if you can misread the answer and it'll match the test result. But, you know, it gives you an idea of if you do this, yeah, that's worse, or yeah, that's better. But as far as
your dump trucks go in the right direction,
right,
better going forward than backwards.
Right. Hopefully, it'll be a good simulation like that Far Side comic of the smart kid pushing on the pole door kind of deal. The ability to do a real quick one-off simulation where I don't care about the mesh, I don't care about a lot of complicated boundary conditions, and then, yeah, this seems like it might work, and then you can either progress it into AIM or into mechanical and do more complicated simulations. And so that kind of hierarchy and the connectivity between those has been, I don't want to say lacking, but not extremely well done.
Plus the ability to change your geometry on the fly.
Right. Yeah. So being able to do all of that and, you know, run quick studies without setting up design of experiments and stuff like that, that I'm pretty excited about that. And just kind of seeing as they add features to it, because already from the technology preview, the fluid side is getting, I'd say, the bulk of the work, or the bulk of the enhancements. But it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, the fluid science was excites me. So we look forward to hearing what you've learned and discovered in Discovery Live.
Ba-dum-bum.
Ba-dum-bum. Jim, what about you?
Yeah, for me, one of the new tools that ANSYS acquired is related to additive manufacturing. Being in the simulation side of servicing in-house as well as external customers, we have a lot of applications that use complex plastic parts and others. And so this new product actually models the details of how a part is manufactured as an additive manufacturing so that it can have the accurate material properties and strength capability based on the way it was actually built. So I'm kind of excited about taking a look at that tool and seeing how it can enhance
you know, a lot of the analyses that we do today.
Perfect. Yeah, and you're probably not aware of this, and I'll share it with you and everybody else on the call, but we did just get access to that new tool, 3D Sim, and to talk to Bob about getting a key for yourself and your machine. And we're, of course, very excited about it because 3D printing is the other thing, one of the three things we do here at PADT, with product development being the third one. And it's pretty neat that we get to combine simulation with 3D printing. And we're very excited about it. We're also very excited about 3D Sim because they're in Park City. And, you know, Skull Candy's a customer there. They're pretty good users, so they don't need a lot of support, unfortunately, so we don't get to visit them too much. But anytime we get the chance to go to Park City, it's a good day. So we're hoping to go visit the 3D Sim guys more often. So Ansys now has a Park City office after that acquisition. So oh, nice. Ansys Park City. Ahmed?
So the two things that I'm interested in getting done in 2018, one of them carries through from 2017, which is our EKM effort here at PADT. So if you didn't know, I think this was in a couple of podcasts ago, that PADT, we're moving all engineering data into EKM for archiving. Anything that's not being worked on should be archived in EKM. Previously, I took a more liberal evangelical approach to it and stood on a hill and or stood on a soapbox and called to it. This year, probably, we're going to change that model a little bit and go with a stick. And so that's that. So getting more users on it, getting more data on it, as well as seeing how RSM, how smooth RSM has been so far to submit to our cluster through EKM. So it's pretty cool stuff. There's a blog post coming out. It describes the whole thing. Look out for it. And the second piece is 2018 started exciting with vulnerabilities and scary stuff for computers. So that's going to be my second thing. Learn and protect and make sure that we're ahead of the ballgame.
Yeah, in fact, then our second discussion is going to be about that latest hardware vulnerability that just came out. And I'll also point out, as you, you're looking for a way to enforce behavior, Taser is a customer. They did change their name, but they still do make sure that, you know, they're making a lot of money off of cameras these days, but they still do make the non-lethal shocking devices, or less than lethal.
Yeah, just make sure you
film them at the same time. That's only to use on us, not
yeah. Just make sure you read them.
I'm just talking about getting our own engineers to use EKM because we're very good. I'm guilty of this as well. I'm very good about talking about how what a great tool these sort of things are, but when push comes to shove, I'm lazy and I don't use it, and then I regret it. So we're going to be a little more forceful this year about that. Okay, Ted, so what's your resolution for 2018?
Yeah, okay, so I guess I'm going last in the group here. Yeah, so for me, it's going to be Space Claim, and not that I haven't already been using Space Claim, because I certainly have, but I'm feeling like, in a lot of ways, I'm just scratching the surface of what all is there. And just some perspective for me, going back 13, 14, 15 years, I transitioned from defining a lot of geometry in mechanical APDL, for example, into using Design Modeler, which at that time was fairly new and becoming capable. And it was kind of a painful transition because I was so used to doing it in the old way, but I just forced myself to learn the newer tool, which at that time was Design Modeler. And, you know, and after I had done that, I'm like, well, gosh, this is so much better.
Yeah.
Why was I even bothering using the older tool? And I've really already made that transition from, you know, many years of using Design Modeler into Space Claim. But, you know, as I said, I'm feeling I'm really just scratching the surface because there's a lot of tools there for dealing with faceted data. And I've used some of those, but, you know, I wouldn't call myself an expert at that. And, you know, there's just still a lot of capabilities for geometry cleanup, geometry manipulation, which, again, I'm using some of, but not all of. And then as a teaser for everyone, I have seen the future a little bit, and I've seen a preview of some of the enhancements that Ansys is adding into Space Claim, and there's some nice looking stuff there, so I'm looking forward to getting my hands on version 19 when that comes out for all of us to be able to experiment with it and learn it and get to use it and be more productive.
Cool. Well, you know, as you were talking about that, I was thinking, what would be if somebody came to me and said, I want to make my ANSYS New Year's resolution, what would be the thing I should learn? I think for most people, it would be Space Claim. There's just a lot of capability and functionality there, and more coming as we go. Discovery Live is built into Space Claim. There's just, it's scriptable now.
Yeah, the scripting's really coming along.
Scripting's really coming along. So it's Python scripting again, so you can automate your geometry creation and modification. So, yeah. Any other suggestions for people out there that you're not going to be a resolution, but you can think of? We pretty much covered, I think, the big ones.
Well, there's, you know, system coupling and system level tools, things like that, that are...
I that would be one that I want to really learn. Is the Simplore, which is the system modeling tool that's pretty powerful. And again, I just haven't had time because I'm busy crafting mission and vision statements instead of...
It's a different way of thinking
for us.
Most of us are used to doing. So.
Well, I would think just whatever your business is, take a step back, look at the big picture.
Yes.
And see how you can put things together. A lot of times we get... Okay, I use this tool or I use this tool, and you get hold of to one thing or another. If you step back and look at what else ANSYS has available, you know, how can you make your life easier all around?
Or even have a discussion with your tech support provider or your ANSYS salesperson and say, these are the problems that I'm facing in the coming year. Is there something I can learn in ANSYS that would help me? Because you may not be aware of the tool. So that's a really good discussion, and we'll keep track of these, and just like our predictions, maybe in our penultimate episode for 2018, we'll take a look at how our predictions came out, and then also how many of us actually followed through on our New Year's resolutions here. So it'll be interesting to see. And as we go through them, we will hopefully the guys will have time to blog what they've learned. So do go to the padtinc.com/blog. And see that, and then we encourage you to do the same. Maybe go to work tomorrow and figure out what your
those vibration isolators aren't cheap.
So let's take a sponsor break where we talk about something we do here at PADT that we would like you to pay us money to do, and so we can pay for the microphone for this podcast. And then we'll come back from the break.
Ugh, hey Linda, I've been trying to run these simulations all day, but the stupid computer isn't fast enough.
Ugh, I know, Dave. I wish IT would give us better computers.
Oh, you know, that reminds me. A friend of mine was saying he got a simulation computer from someplace called PADT.
What's so special about it?
Well, I guess they have this program called the Cube Computing Solutions, where they custom build simulation computers just to fit your needs with whatever you want, whatever graphics card you need, the amount of cores you need, whatever works best for you.
Huh. How do I get one of these?
Well, if I remember him correctly, he said you go to www.padtinc.com/cube. I think that's right.
Huh. Maybe we should tell the IT guy about this.
Yeah, maybe we should.
Okay, welcome back. And as we were on the break, Doug reminded me that one of the things we need to pay for is the vibration isolator we added for the recording here in the PADT seminar room. It's we need a lot of money for this vibration isolator for the microphone. It's actually a trash can that I turned upside down and put it on. But hopefully you won't hear us banging on the table as much. Our next topic is actually on face value, not necessarily related to ANSYS, but it's going to impact anybody that uses a computer. And if there's one thing you can say about ANSYS users is we all use computers and our livelihood is based upon it. And I got to make sure I get this right, but it's the Spectre side channel vulnerability. And my understanding of it is that it's actually not a hack or a software issue, but actually something in the way that the processors work that Ahmed will explain to us that allows somebody with ill intentions to get in and actually see what the processor's seeing, and therefore encryption don't matter no more because it's after it's been decrypted and it's in the processor. So it's a little scary. And the other reason why I thought it was important to talk about on this podcast is one of the things that I've heard and I want to learn more about is that it actually has the fix for it, bypasses the vulnerability in the chip hardware, and that actually can slow down your performance. So that may be a big impact to those of us who care about a 5% or greater decrease in performance. So, Ahmed, you've researched it a little bit. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is?
Okay, so disclaimer, I'm no security expert. So this is my understanding of
CPU architecture and the problems. And it's actually a dual problem. It's not only Spectre. There's another piece of it called Meltdown as well,
okay,
which is pretty much the same thing. So let's tone it back. I'll try not to geek out. So since 1995, most CPU manufacturers introduced a thing called speculative fetches. So it's like being at the store and you need a box of nails and you're like, okay, let me buy a hammer just in case I don't have a hammer at home. You go home, you find your hammer, you return the hammer the next day. So speculative fetches are that way. It fetches data that it might need. It's predicting that it needs. It's useful if it does need it, that for it to be close to the processor. If it's not, it will discard it. The problem arises is at the time when this data is put in the cache, between the time it's put in the cache and the first read request comes to check if this data is what we're looking for, this data is sniffable.
Ah.
So at that small window before, because these CPUs do an access check, can I access this data or not, after it's been cached. So in that little gap, that's when the vulnerability is exposed. And the difference between Meltdown and Spectre is Meltdown is really scary because it sits between regular programs and kernel programs, kernel requests. Mm-hmm. That's where all your hash keys and all of your passwords and encryption and all of these keys sit in the kernel commands. And Spectre sits in common programs. So, you know, your Chrome would be looking at your Microsoft Word and things like that. That's crosstalk outside the kernel. Inside the kernel, the example that I thought of was when you go to, I don't know, buy something off of eBay, when it asks you to scan your fingerprint on your iPhone, it's a kernel call to enable the hardware and unhash the fingerprint into a password and feed it into eBay. And if you have this vulnerability, if there's a tool that's actually using this vulnerability, it will get the whole sequence that's required to unhash your fingerprint and get your password.
Okay, so let me ask you a few questions for clarification, because that helps.
That's a lot.
It helps me understand a lot. So one of the things I first heard about it is an Intel thing, but it's all processors that use this speculative fetching.
All processors use speculative, not fetching. That use.
So that's why I saw somebody mentioned that the NVIDIA video cards, some of the newer NVIDIA video cards have this vulnerability.
ARM processors, Intel's processors, AMD processors, even some of the more purpose-built processors use prefetching because it's so amazing, yeah. So fast, and so
cool. You get that productivity gain.
Exactly. Yeah. And the productivity gain can be really high, mm-hmm. up to 30%, 35%, depending on the application that you're using. So the productivity loss.
So when people talk about that 30%, that's because you're not going to get that 30% gain anymore because you turned it off.
Of course, the tests that have taken place have been very synthetic in the sense that they're doing kernel calls all okay. the time, or trying to do prefetch calls all the time, trying to trigger them and see how bad they really are. So good news, most specialists say that gamers won't see an impact.
Phew! Yeah.
All right, the world can go on.
Because I just got a Nintendo Switch at Christmas, and if Mario can't jump as fast as I want him to, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, there's a 0.2 millisecond delay in the jump. Now, simulation, which is where we live, mm-hmm. that's still up in the air. But I'm guessing because it's mostly ALU, mostly like internal CPU, non-kernel mm-hmm. Requests, mm-hmm. we shouldn't have that much of an issue.
So I'll interrupt you and let you know that one of the reasons why David couldn't join us to talk about this is that he's actually running benchmarks right now. Tom Chambers here, who's been on the podcast before, he's getting a new box. So we not knowing this was coming, we were running a bunch of benchmarks on the new box, and then he put the patch on when we found out about it, and now he's going to run the same benchmarks today and tomorrow. So do look for a blog article on that to see what the impact is, at least on a couple benchmarks.
So the
patch is not just to turn off the cache.
Patch is to actually turn off the prefetching.
So you're disabling prefetching.
In the worst case scenario, if you turn it off, then you lose all that performance gain. Right. And the problem is, it's been since 1995, this has been going on. So all kernels, operating systems, programs are assuming that you have this functionality running. It's a given. It's not something that they can program around it. So the idea is now they have to, you know,
program around it.
Yeah, it's a complete paradigm shift for like low level code.
Or make the cache not readable, right?
It's a hardware issue.
It's a hardware.
It's actual silicone.
Silicone.
Yes.
It's there, so you can see it. So the other thing that I did read was that,
too late.
Correct me if I'm wrong,
too late.
They've actually not found anybody that's used this exploit.
Yeah.
But now that they all know about it.
That's why I dropped out earlier. As I was part of my
computer. We gotta close the door.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
So the advice that I got, mm-hmm. Or that I found was, first of all, don't panic.
Yeah.
There isn't.
Yeah. Doug already went. I don't know if you heard, but he already went and changed his pants.
So there's no reason to panic, as there hasn't been a single proven attack. The vulnerability is immense. Everything from your iPhone to your fridge to your thermostat to anything that runs a microprocessor can be vulnerable. It's not demonstrated. Nobody knows it, but now that it's announced, I'm sure there are a ton of hackers who are sitting somewhere. How can we break this? It's going to be like, you know,
this is their challenge.
Exactly. It's going to be the challenge of 2018.
But they do already have a patch.
Most vendors are coming with patches. Microsoft's patch is due this coming Tuesday, I believe, mm-hmm. or in a couple of days. They might release early before their cycle. Apple has investigated and said it's on emergency for them.
Mm-hmm. Although they do have patches, because we're patching our
iOS is different, but Mac OS, they're not.
Oh, iOS is working.
Yeah, as far as I know, they're not going crazy to patch them. Linux is rolling out patches. All the major web browsers are rolling out patches. So everybody's taking it really seriously. So one of the best advices is like, just hang on for a second. Mm-hmm. You know, there isn't a proven threat, especially to normal people. If there are going to be attacks, they're going to be against large server farms, mm-hmm. cloud operators, where
credit card companies.
Exactly. Yeah. There's value to the data.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's a vulnerability, not a threat at this point, as far as we know.
It's a massive vulnerability.
So we don't need to start inventing our matrices by hand.
Exactly.
You can.
Take a little bit longer.
Or you can just the other question I wanted to ask is, if an exploit came along, it would look like a virus or malware, right? It would be some piece of code that got on your computer that could read that cache.
It has to run somewhere.
One
of the issues that a lot of developers are saying, why wait before you run the patches, is antivirus software may detect your patch as a risk and block it.
So wait for it to catch up.
Exactly.
Yeah, the antivirus has to.
So
be aware of the patches.
This is scary.
Fun.
So for Ansys users, the main thing is we've got this. I'm gonna look at it. I'm gonna do it a half glass full.
And also,
since the 90s, we've had this productivity.
Also, we're not losing 64-bit memory addressing.
That's gonna be turned off.
That's probably been the bigger.
We're gonna lose that advantage. So it's not like we're losing the frosting, not the cake, right? The training cost.
Right.
The frosting's the best part. Yeah.
We've had 20 years of extra productivity.
That's right. No. A bigger.
I can envision a Dilbert cartoon where Wally blames his lack of productivity on.
So hopefully your bosses aren't that savvy and will accept the fact that you didn't finish your Ansys analysis because of this vulnerability, or the patch to the vulnerability slowed down your run, and that's why it didn't finish. The fact that you forgot to submit it when you get home, he doesn't have to know about that.
Right.
But so do watch the news for it. Do watch our blog post, and we'll talk about it next podcast, what our results are. We were lucky enough to have this new box that we can do this benchmark on, apples to apples. So we'll let you know. And, stay safe out there. It's a dangerous world in the world of cybersecurity. So that came home. I hope they don't find an exploit for it, because that's just scary. Okay, so the next thing to talk about, and does anybody have anything to, before I move on, anything to add? Okay, well, thank you, Ahmed. That was really I do feel better now. I was a little panicked this morning about it. So upcoming events of interest is we do here at PADT have a webinar coming up. We only have one this month, January 24th. It's on carbon direct digital synthesis is the technology. It's a new 3D printing technology that we're bringing on board for production. And we're offering a service called on-demand manufacturing where we actually make multiple parts and up to thousands of parts using this 3D printer that's really fast and is really suited for that application. So if you're interested in what's going on in the 3D printing world from a carbon standpoint, for those of you who do simulation on 3D printed parts, the cool thing about the carbon parts is that they are not directionally, they don't build in the same layered process, so the material properties are the same in every direction. So that's a biggie, and there's no voids as well. So it's a fully dense orthotropic material, so that makes our simulation much, 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 much easier.
I think you mean isotropic.
Isotropic, thank you. Yeah, isotropic. Not isotropic. Okay. No, it's not orthotropic.
Isotropic.
It is isotropic. I always get the two confused.
Yeah. Pull out the textbook.
Yeah, I always got to think about it. Yeah. Iso is one, but no. Okay, ortho means in one direction. What else do we have? I'll be at the Pacific Design Show with other people in Long Beach. I know it's in Anaheim this year. We will have a booth there. I'm speaking on 3D printing and design for 3D printing and simulation for 3D printing on February 6th at the Pacific Design Show. So if you are there, try and make my talk. I have two talks, actually, one on installing a metal 3D printer, which most of our listeners don't care about. But the other one's going to be about design for 3D printing, metal 3D printing. And simulation for metal 3D printing. So do show up for that if you're there. And if you're not there for the talks, stop by our booth. Patrick, Manoj, Renee, a bunch of us John Williams will be running around. So do stop by and say hi if you're there visiting Mickey or if you come to the Pacific Design Show. And then our next webinar for the ANSYS world, first one of the year, is going to be on February 21st. And it's a look at Discovery Live and how it works for fluids. It's pretty cool. I think most of us agree that the huge wow factor on Discovery Live is how it does fluids. So we're going to start with that. Start with a bang on that. News-wise, ANSYS stock is at $152 a share. It's been up there above 150 for a while. The 52-week high is still 156. And
because of Bitcoin.
Of course, very interested to see what happens. I never understand the stock market.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know what ANSYS is going to announce for their Q4 results or what their annual results are going to be. We never know until they put them out there to everybody else. But I'm always surprised at the behavior. Like sometimes they have like a really good quarter, but the stock goes down because I don't understand the stock market. I don't know. So. Bitcoin, because of Bitcoin, because of cyber trends, yeah. Bitcoin. Maybe we should do a PADT Bitcoin. PADT coin, yeah. We got the compute power. We could use our cluster, right, to mine Bitcoin.
Not very effectively, though.
Don't get me started. Buy tulip bulbs. Buy tulip bulbs. News-wise... And ANSYS did announce their 2018 Hall of Fame competition users, and there's some really cool things in there. Do check that out. My favorite was Delphi did a detailed combustion nozzle. It's a really hard simulation. It's kind of stuff that I think if somebody asked me 10 years ago, would we be able to model this kind of, you know, really complicated flow with chemical reactions and stuff like that? I go, no, we'll never be able to do that. We're doing it, and it's a really cool simulation. It's beautiful, too. The graphics are gorgeous. So check that out. In a related note, they announced a new competition for Discovery Live. So you can download Discovery Live for free and use the preview. It's not quite released yet, and they want to see what people are doing with it. So they have a competition to show how you used it, and there'll be some winners for that. A few not a lot of blog posts because it's beginning of the year. ANSYS blog had a nice thing on cloud computing for antenna design. So it's kind of how they did some very sophisticated complex HFSS simulation for an antenna and use the cloud to kind of spread it out and get it done on time. And then maybe the HFSS guys don't take holiday breaks. Maybe that's why they're the only ones that published anything. But the other one, anything good, was there's a really neat article in the ANSYS blog about antenna placement inside jetliners. So where they put antennas inside that big metal tube that's got all sorts of things inside of it. It was kind of an interesting look at that. We have a couple of great ones that Joe wrote and Ahmed wrote that are sitting in the in a folder called Focus Queue that I have not published yet, so my apologies. We will get those out hopefully this week or next. There's some good ones in there, so look for that. And that's it for this week. I don't think there's any, is there anything else before we say goodbye that anybody wants to add? Any news you guys are aware of? All right. Well, we'll just go around the table. As a reminder, when we say goodbye, you say goodbye, and then I want a bit of wisdom, a joke.
All right, I'm going to use that second part of yours, Joe, as my joke.
My joke is a dumb joke I heard on the radio the other day.
Okay.
You know, why do you not tell secrets in a cornfield?
I don't know.
Too many years.
There's a court order preventing me from saying it like that.
Yeah,
so.
I'm sure that was an
and they might stalk you.
Oh.
Right. Yeah, you guys are. Yeah. It's like real estate. It's all about location.
You
gotta
say
location.
It in that creepy way you do sometimes, Doug. Or I may stalk you. Okay. Is that the reason why you're on Skype? Is you can't the bracelet will go off the. All right. Jim.
Oh boy, yeah, that's a hard one to follow. I don't think I'm going to be able to come up with anything on the fly here. So,
I had to steal it off the radio.
Yeah, well, yeah, better off than me. So I don't know. I'm going to have to defer.
Next time you're on, you have to have two pieces of advice.
All right. So since we're talking farming and fields. Why did the scarecrow win an award? Because he was outstanding in his field.
He's been corny.
He's a very corny.
Well, I can't remember if I used
someone is deleting their subscription.
So I apologize. But what did the zero say to the eight?
Well,
nice belt.
wisdom because I guess the wisdom would be invest in Bitcoin unless it goes down. The joke would be a type 210 words a minute, but 0% accuracy.
Well, Doug, let's see if you can save it.
Just stealing a Mitch Hedberg joke. I think you can either the punchline either 0% accuracy or it's in my own language. I think that's the two ways you can go with it. So.
Well, we really appreciate you listening. I hope you found it informative. I learned actually quite a bit this time as well, which I usually do. So that must be a good sign. Again, do share this with your friends and coworkers. And if your coworkers aren't your friends, you can still share it with them. That the podcast is fun and it's informative and it's not too long. And the sound quality doesn't look too bad, so do share it with everybody. And again, my name is Eric Miller, and my word of wisdom is, you know, we made it through another year. There's something meaningful about that, but I don't know what the hell it is.
Thank you for joining us for our 11th episode of the All Things ANSYS podcast. Today's recording was a lot of fun, and we hope you learned as much as we did. If the ending didn't seem to make too much sense, that's not just us. The sync between Doug on Skype and the rest of us didn't seem to work, and he was sort of in his own time zone. Insert joke here. We'll work on that for the next podcast. Apologies. And as a reminder, this podcast is not affiliated in any way with ANSYS Inc., and the opinions expressed are those of the people on the show only. This is especially true of when we are talking about potential acquisitions and the stock. That was all guessing. For more information, please visit www.padtinc.com/blog, and please share your thoughts and questions through an email to podcast@padtinc.com. See you next time.